I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down the key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fought and died. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, fighting in a fought-and-died key. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the right beside me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Go ahead and play the show that we did yesterday on the ethno state. That was, of course, the chairman of the American Freedom Party, and that's Bill Johnson, and Ken Givitan, our producer, and myself. A lot of interesting racial topics, and I hope you enjoy this. And this is the ethno state we had it just a moment ago, and we start off with a discussion of the baby boomers. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com, which we hope will start momentarily. We have some rather difficult internet connections here.
Hello, everyone. This is Bill Johnson, chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of The Ethno State with Paul Fromm and Ken Givitan, the usual suspects. Ken, you were telling us by email that there was something that was banned on our show last week. What was that all about?
Yeah, we did a segment about the Holocaust, making the point that there's nothing in history that is above scrutiny. We should be skeptical about everything they tell us, including the Holocaust. That segment got taken down by YouTube, so apparently somebody flag-bombed it. And it really wasn't what they call Holocaust denial. We were just saying, hey, you need to look into this, no matter what it is. But that was enough. They took it down.
Well, now, when you mentioned that off the air, Paul Fromm went apoplectic. So why don't you repeat that? Tell us what your problem
is. I was just wearing the sun too long. That's why I look red. No, I was outraged because I think a lot of people naively believe that there's free speech in the United States. And there is. It's better than what we have in Canada, and better than, of course, what our comrades have in Europe. But there are dark forces that basically want to shut you up on certain topics. And as Ken was saying last week, we talked about a black principal in Florida who had given a private email written to a parent who was asking about Holocaust studies in the school. And he said, well, something like he was not an expert, but he thought that there wasn't really firm historical evidence of this, and that some people have different points of view. And of course, he's under tremendous pressure, and there are members of the state house who wanted him fired, and I think he's being moved to a different job. And we were just talking about that, and I think what basically we said, or Ken said, that everything should be open to question. And the response tells you that what we're dealing with is not a historical point of view, it's a religion. It's a fanatical religion. If you don't believe, you're a heretic and you should be burned. Well, okay, you should be silenced because we don't burn people anymore.
Right. They would if it could, I guarantee you.
Well, then actually,
he didn't say, look at you jackasses, why don't you consult this book or that book, and here's the truth. No, it wasn't an argument. It's shut up.
Okay, but here's my defense to Google. First of all, Google is owned, I think, by two Jews, and so they want to squelch all the destruction of their Holocaust religion or whatever it is. But I was thinking, what if I owned Google? What would I ban? I'd ban all sorts of people promoting interracial marriage. I'd just go to town. I'd be banning this person. I'd be banning that person. And I'd sit back in my chair and say, I'm a powerful dude, man. I can really ban all these people. And I'd do it until I was stopped. So I can see where these guys are coming from.
Well, that's why they've got to be stopped. And I think Donald Trump is occasionally pointed in that direction. These are virtual monopolies. YouTube and Facebook are almost complete monopolies. Not quite, but and they should be treated, in my opinion, like public utilities, that they've got to serve the public. As long as they get paid, but we don't pay. We're the raw material for their advertising. So they're in a position to make bucket loads of money through using us. They have an obligation as part of that near monopoly situation to serve the public regardless of people's views. And that could be done by legislation.
I think that's the answer, because the only way you're going to be able to rein in a Sergey Brin or a Larry Page or a William Johnson, if he were part of the owner of that, would be to actually have legislation. Otherwise, human nature is going to say, I got control, I'm exercising it. So I think that is a situation. I do believe that even though there's a large libertarian streak in me, I do believe that these should be regulated like utilities, so that it'll curb all this stuff. But in any event, maybe this portion will be banned also, but that's life. Okay, let's go to something that's a little more benign. We'll talk about the Ku Klux Klan. So basically what we have is, we've got the first title is Tennessee GOP Governor Targets Day Honoring Nathan Bedford Forrest. So what's this all about, Ken?
Well, surprisingly, this is a Republican governor, Bill Lee. And according to the story, he was initially resistant to making this change. But the bottom line is that the far left has succeeded in portraying Nathan Bedford Forrest as a racist. And so any mention of him has to be taken down. So that includes a day. I don't think they have like a holiday, state holiday, but it's a day that just honors this Confederate hero.
Okay, first of all, who was Nathan Bedford Forrest?
My knowledge of him is very limited, but my understanding is he is a Confederate general, or he was, obviously, before he died. And beyond that, I don't know.
Well, he was apparently an expert in rebel tactics. He was one of the most successful Confederate generals. And he came from Memphis, Tennessee, and went into business in Memphis, I believe, after the war. But during the era of the carpetbaggers and Reconstruction, when a lot of white people, especially white women, were being attacked by some of the newly freed slaves, and there was a lot of turmoil, he was one of the founders of the Ku Klux Klan, which banded together to try to defend white people. That was its original intention there in the 1860s. So he was, I believe, the founder of the Klan. So the enemies of our people, of course, have defamed him for years.
Well, see, the late 1860s saw a lot of turmoil in the South, where the radical Republicans were really bearing down on white Confederate soldiers and officers and the people who were supported the South during the Civil War. And as a result, great numbers of them left under persecution, left the South, and they came to Los Angeles. And that's why Los Angeles has historically a very strong sympathy and connection with the Southern states. I believe that if you were not living then at that time, you couldn't really realize how oppressive it was to be a Southern man and even a Southern belle there, because the establishment radical Republicans were really bearing down and exacting retribution on the South. And then you had these blacks, newly freed slaves, were exercising their newfound power and doing a lot of bad things. So as a result, I think that gave rise to the Ku Klux Klan, which it was telling to me that even back then, they felt a need to cover their faces with masks because of the retribution that they would face for what they were doing. However, I believe that this rabid hatred of the Klan and Nathan Bedford Forrest and all of these people is just something that's appeared in the last few years. I mean, I couldn't sit through the movie in its entirety, but at the very beginning, Forrest Gump, they talked about how Forrest Gump was named after Nathan Bedford Forrest. And then you had a lot, I think the movie that was watched more than any other movie in the world was Gone with the Wind. And that had a lot of laudatory things to say about the Klan. So I think we're living in a specifically culturally correct, PC correct environment where we can't say anything positive about people like that.
Some people say that Gone with the Wind was a remake of Birth of a Nation. Mm-hmm. Which I tried to watch that movie, but I could watch Gump, but I couldn't watch Birth of a Nation. I just got bored.
I have often said that my favorite movie is Birth of a Nation, but I've never seen it. Yeah. So you can tell it's from politics as opposed to artistic endeavors.
All right, but guys. So, well, tell me if I'm wrong on this. It seems to me that the Ku Klux Klan was formed and operated as a type of civil rights organization, that they were just looking out for the welfare and the betterment of white people, and specifically those who were oppressed during and after the Civil War. So I never saw it. No, go ahead.
No, I think that's right. And it's that fact that makes it just rat poison to those who hate the white race. Those who want us replaced must totally demonize any sign of healthy white resistance, and that's what the Klan was in its heyday. And they don't want those bad ideas getting out there. They must be absolutely demonized. And it's interesting when you mentioned Birth of a Nation. I have seen it. I'm not a fan of black and white movies. I'm even less a fan of movies without sound, but it's quite dramatic. And when it first came out, it was actually shown in a command performance in the White House by none other than a man who really was at heart a Southerner, and that was President Woodrow Wilson. Did many other not so good things, but that was something in his favor.
But I think we need to point out that it is not just an attack on these extremist groups. I mean, like you cannot say anything good about Nazi Germany. You can't say anything good about the Ku Klux Klan. But it doesn't stop there. Nowadays, you can't say anything good about George Washington or Thomas Jefferson. And so there's going to come a time when we're going to start pushing back because, see, the whites have been in control of the West for so long that they would allow all sorts of attacks coming from inconsequential groups. But now as the inconsequential groups are gaining power on every level and we are no longer in control, I think there is going to be pushback and maybe we can start to reclaim some of our heritage. But more than reclaiming our heritage, maybe we can reclaim a future.
Well, here's a question for you guys. Why is it that you seem to be, what is the word, immune from thought reform? I mean, you guys both have your head screwed on straight. And, there's other guys like James Edwards and Tom who couldn't be here tonight. But I'm seeing all these guys, a lot of women too, they just, like, they're immune. Well, all the brainwashing doesn't take.
I've thought a lot about that, and I think that it is something that was innate, inborn in me from a very young age. Because I don't know that my parents inculcate or indoctrinate any of these positions, but I do remember at an early age thinking, well, people would say, oh, Billy, you tan so easily. And I thought, I don't want to tan. You know, I don't want to be dark. And also, I would acknowledge the very few non-whites that would come into my world as a young child. I would recognize their difference and would not be pleased as much as when I was around my own people. So I think that it was something that was innate in me, and I think that it started out that way in my brother and sister, but they have long since jettisoned those views, and they're pretty much, of course, they both have just tons of white kids, but they don't think like I do, so they're on the wrong side of the fence.
They called you Billy?
Yeah, called me Billy.
Or my dad called me Billy. I guess I'd better wish you a happy King Billy Day, because that was on the 12th of July.
Okay.
Celebrated by the Ulstermen and the Ulster Protestants.
Yeah, in our family, our extended family, they called all the kids by the first and middle name. I have no idea why they did that.
Okay.
But that's way outside.
So what were you? You were Kenny Ray?
I was Kenny Paul.
Kenny Paul. Okay. But that's kind of a southern approach to things.
It is, yeah. But Indiana, I think parts of Indiana, they say Indiana's Kentucky, but moved up north.
Yeah.
They broke down on the way to Detroit.
So to get back to the main article, I really didn't get that. So the governor of this state, was it Tennessee? First came out and said, no, let's leave Nathan Bedford Forrest Day alone. And then there has been some rallying. And so now he's saying, let's remove it. Or what? I'm sorry, what's that again?
That is the essence of the article. Initially, he just kind of ignored it. But pressure was put on, and political pressure, people gave in. And so now we're still not sure it's going to happen, but July 13th, birthday of Nathan Bradford Forrest, and they're not going to honor it anymore. Now, let me just add this real quick. The strategy seems to be this, and I say this frequently, but the first thing they do is they establish that the most grievous sin in the universe is racism. So once that's established, then anything they don't like, they identify it as racist. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, racist, they can't like them. Everything is racist that they don't like. And if you talk about the Holocaust, even benign, you're not criticizing it or denying it. Still, they identify it as racist, so it's out of here.
Yeah, and I think that that calumny is losing a lot of its power because everything is racist and everybody's racist. In fact, all of these articles that you cite today pretty much are along those lines. The next article that I want to talk about is, I guess, racism that comes not from white people, but comes from Chinese. So what's that article all about, Ken?
This is a Chinese diplomat, and my understanding is he is somewhere in the Middle East. But he engaged in a Twitter fight with, Susan Rice, who was working with Barack Obama as National Security Advisor. And she was bearing down on the Chinese because they allegedly discriminate against Muslims. They put them in effectively concentration camps.
Yeah, they do. Well, re-education camps.
Re-education camps. They say they're work camps. They're training camps so they can be skilled. But beside the point, she laid into this Chinese guy. Well, the Chinese in general. On Twitter, and he fired back. And his observation was something that we can't dare say in the United States. But what he said was, hey, what about Washington, D.C.? There are parts of Washington, D.C., south side of the town, white people dare not go. In other words, don't, you know, you're in a glass house here. Judge not, lest you be not judged. So effectively what he's saying is racism is alive and well in the United States. But that's not verbatim what he said, but I think he's got a point. But I don't see it as white racism, I see it as black racism. If you're a white person and you can't go into a black neighborhood because you're white, that's racism.
But for the benefit of people who just may not know, parts of Washington, D.C. are unsafe. Not because there are gangs of crazy Icelanders or out of control or nasty Scotsmen. These are highly dangerous areas because they're overwhelmingly black. When I first started to go to Washington, D.C. In the very early 80s, one of the first things my guide, who you probably would know, Peter Bermerlo would be there, that told me is you've got to be careful. This is different from where you grew up in almost all white Etobicoke in Western Toronto. There is a very dangerous. In fact, these two streets in that direction are safe. But go beyond that, there are problems, and that's one of the first things newcomers, especially people from perhaps more homogeneous areas, have to know. You've got to know where these areas are, and they're dangerous because of who lives there. And so the Chinese diplomat's absolutely right.
By the way, while you were talking, I looked up people murdered in Iceland. You mentioned Iceland.
Yes.
They list three. Throughout all of human history, three people have been murdered in Iceland.
Well, I think we're finally waking up in America. Basically, white people are the only race of people that try to ignore race and look beyond that. The Japanese, the Chinese, the blacks, the browns, every race of people except us recognize the differences and distinctions of a selective group of people. And almost all peoples around the world, they generally place the blacks at the very bottom, being the scariest, the less productive. And that's what they observe, but the whites cannot recognize that. If you do recognize that and mention that, then it's really, hate comes down on you in spades. So,
do you know Chinese?
I can read it somewhat, sure. But I deal with a lot of Chinese, and my ears get burned whenever I hear them talk about other races. And the Japanese, they will let into them like nobody's business.
Well, I had some legal dealings some years ago with a Chinese lawyer, and after the hair gets let down a little bit, even though this person was quite liberal and progressive, had absolutely no liking for blacks, and even told me some of a few choice Chinese words for them, among the nicest ones, like monkey. I found that Chinese are extremely racially conscious. They have a lot of nasty terms for us, you know, like guai lo, meaning pale ghost, and I don't know what the word is, but it translates roughly as big hairy hands and so on. Whereas, you know, I mean, got to be so careful about what we say. I think it was about 30 years ago, then Japanese Premier Nakasone was visiting the United States. Takashita. And he was talking about the one of the big Japanese auto companies was looking to relocate and build a big factory. And they decided to build it in an area of North Mississippi that was apparently, as I understand it, mostly white. And he made that point. He wanted a white, I guess people wanted a white workforce because blacks were lazy. And he said that. And of course, you know, there was a collective heart attack at that. And this is over 30 years ago.
But well, I think that has not always been the case. I think it was last week I was reading about the so-called insurrection in Wilmington, North Carolina, 1898, and the city at the time was majority black, and there was a black newspaper, and they were siding with the Radical Republicans, or whatever replaced the Radical Republicans, and they basically took over. And white people would not put up with it, and they rioted. And, I mean, we don't see that today or anything close to it. The point that I'm making is white people have not always thought this way. There was a time when we would take a stand for ourselves.
Well, I think that it's a combination of our innate desire to be nice and like everybody and to be liked by everybody. And also, coupled with that, the severe anti-white propaganda and trying to promote this concept of noblesse oblige, to raise the people up so that they can achieve what we have achieved. And so, like, for example, recently in this little, one of my school-aged children were trying to get rent a room, and there was a black girl that was a sweet black girl in this room full of girls, in this dorm with all these girls, and they were introducing a Chinese girl from China who wanted to rent a room in that space. And she talked about who all the roommates were, and they said, well, and this girl, she's a very nice black girl. And she goes, I won't move here. I won't go in here. I won't live in the same dorm where a black person was. So here she came over from China. She wanted to live around white people, and she absolutely would not be in the same apartment with a black girl, even though all these other white girls vouched for her, saying, oh, she's a good girl. And so this underscores the Chinese deep-seated dislike for other races. And they also have a deep-seated admiration or fear or projecting being above them, the white people. Of course, they will talk down on us, but they think that the white people still, and maybe unjustly, that we are the top of the world, and that's changing as you look at all these women, white women that have tattoos all over their body and are degenerated and off into drugs. But traditionally, the white person was really looked upon as being superior by the races. Okay, so let's go on to the next story. I think that the one I want to talk about is the Biden. Trump is the most openly racist president in American history. See, if our president is called most racist of all, that's going to lessen, you know, the meaning of the term. But what is this about, Ken?
Well, pretty much. Do what? There was Joe Biden said that. Apparently, he was being interviewed by Fox News, and his exact statement was, he was called the most openly racist and divisive president in American history. So, having heard that, I did a little bit of Googling, and what I found was, and this is kind of from a left-wing perspective, but to go over these very quickly, I'm not going to read all of them because it takes long. But to John Coolidge, 30th president, he signed the Immigration Act of 1924.
You mean Calvin Coolidge?
Calvin, John Calvin Coolidge, sorry.
Okay.
I think Calvin was his middle name, first name was John.
Okay. But, not Hobbs?
Yeah, not Hobbs. That's fine. But the Immigration Act, the Johnson-Reed Act of 1924, if I understand it correctly, it effectively reestablished quotas. So immigrants had to reflect by percentage or something the people that were already here. Then there was Dwight David Eisenhower. There's more trivia. What was Eisenhower's birth name? It was not Dwight. His birth name was David. He was born as David Dwight Eisenhower.
Okay.
For some reason he liked Dwight. Got nothing to do with anything. But reportedly, don't know if this is true or not, but he supported Brown versus Board of Education, but not with much enthusiasm. Then there was James Polk. They say he's a leftist because we won the Mexican-American War, which makes perfect sense to a leftist. Thomas Woodrow Wilson. Woodrow Wilson. What is it with these guys and their first names? They keep changing. He is credited with supporting the Ku Klux Klan. He may have even been a Klan member. I've read that somewhere.
Well, but also, let me interject you. Donald is Donald Trump's middle name. It's racist Donald Trump.
That's true.
Go on.
Thomas Jefferson, we don't need to talk about him, but he said, quote, "The blacks are inferior to the whites in the endowments of both body and mind." That is in the only book he ever wrote called Notes of the State of Virginia, 1787. And he was also an advocate of repatriation of blacks to Africa. James Monroe supported the American Colonization Society. You guys are familiar with that, same thing. An organization that existed for the express purpose of repatriating blacks to Africa. What would happen if we had a group like that today? Andrew Jackson, everybody knows he's a racist because he hated the Indians. That's the story. And Andrew Johnson originally lumped these together because I got him confused. Somebody pointed it out to me. But he vetoed the Freedmen Bureau Bill and the Civil Rights Bill of 1866. Congress were not able to override his veto, so they amended it, and he vetoed it again. The second one they passed. So he's called a racist because of that. Other racists? George Washington, slave owner. James Madison, slave owner. James Monroe, slave owner. Martin Van Buren, slave owner. But according to Biden, racist Donald Trump is the most racist president ever.
Okay.
I'm surprised you didn't mention some of the views of the great emancipator, Abraham Lincoln. Lincoln clearly stated he did not think blacks and whites could coexist. And after they were freed, he wanted to send the slave back to Africa. Of course, he was assassinated before that could come about. But even a man who opposed slavery, did not think that the two races could live together. That is almost never mentioned today. Biden is a desperate man and a historical illiterate.
Okay. Again, I need to defend Vice President Biden because I think he is correct. I mean, Donald Trump has come out recently that said the most openly racist thing that I have heard. If had I said this recently, I'd be in trouble losing my job. He came out and told four congresswomen, say, you know, if you don't like America, get out, leave America, go home, go back to your rat infested countries or something like that. I'm paraphrasing that. I mean, you see on the YouTube where people, some gal sitting in a restaurant somewhere says, go back to your country where you came from, and the gal gets excoriated by the entire world. She loses her job. So Donald Trump come out and said the most racist thing imaginable in this recent time. He says he told these four non-white congresswomen, get out of this country and go back to your rat-infested country. Uh-huh. So he is taking this concept to another level. And Biden is absolutely right. Who's wrong, who's absolutely wrong, are the Republicans and the other people saying that, oh, you can't criticize our president like that. Now, my concept is that's not criticism. That's a compliment. And Donald Trump is doing more to move us forward than anything. Because how many times have all of us thought, you know, this Omar, what's her name, she should be heading back to Somalia. We've all thought that. And our president is saying it. So good on Donald Trump.
Why is it, guys, that the far left politicians, the Democrats, and the media fall for this? Every time, you know, he's triggering these people. To use the leftist term, he's just starting a conversation. But you know, he's creating media buzz, and the idiots fall for it every single time.
You know, I think you're giving Donald Trump too much credit. I think he's not trying to, he's not some grand plan. He just thinks, he just says what he thinks, you know, and deal with it. And so I don't think it's a grand plan. I just think it's his innate feelings are coming through because he isn't used to suppressing them. And I think that's even a good trait because he's not got some nefarious plan in the background. He's just saying what he thinks. So I think that's a good thing.
I agree with most of what Bill said, but about, I mean, Trump's absolutely courageous leadership. He's saying what all sorts of people, all sorts of men and women probably have said around around coffee tables and miners are across America, but you're not supposed to say beyond the small circle. Hey, if these weirdly dressed malcontents so hate America, why don't they go back to the, what he called earlier, the shitholes it came from?
And Trump knows it.
I don't think that's denounced as racist by Biden, but what's racist about it? It's their ingratitude and their nastiness that he's assailing. He's not saying you're of a different race or color, you go back. He's saying your bad behavior suggests maybe you'd be happier back in Somalia.
But also, Donald Trump, his response to the left-wing attacks on him is also great. He says, hey, a lot of people support me. A lot of people think like I do. And so what he's doing, he's legitimizing. It's just not him that's legitimizing this statement. He's legitimizing everybody. He says, a lot of people think like that. And that also is moving us forward in the right direction. So what we all need to do is we don't criticize Vice President Biden. We say, thank you very much. You're exactly right. And he's helping us move in the right direction. So both Donald Trump and Biden should enjoy our favorable comments.
But Trump also said today that there, I think it was today, that there's not a racist bone in my body.
Well, okay. All right. Well, we'll take that for what it's worth.
But I think he's also shown by example how you deal with that accusation. That's racist. And the reaction all too often is to, well, actually, I misspoke myself. I didn't really mean that. I was having a bad hair day. I'm not racist. And some of my best friends or whatever. No, if you've said what you really believe, stick to it. And that's what Trump has done, rather than pathetic retreat, which doesn't save you anyway.
I heard him being interviewed by a mob of reporters, and somebody with a mic in his face said, so-and-so called you a racist. And Trump's response was, off-the-cuff response was, who cares? Then he went on to talk to somebody else.
And also his press secretary, Kellyanne Conway, a Jewish reporter, was just really hammering on her question. And so she says, about the hemming on this question about Donald Trump telling these guys to go back to their other country. And her response was, what's your ethnicity? Where are you from? He said, I'm not saying that's none of your business. She said, yes, it is. If you're going to ask all these questions, I want to ask that. And he said, well, I'm not saying. She says, well, I'm Scotch and I'm Italian. She didn't go on to say that her husband is Filipino and she's got all these Filipino kids, which makes me want to throw up. But she did say, what's your ethnicity? So it even bleeds down to the lower level people where they're taking the same tack. So, I think this is one of the most forthright observations that Biden has ever made. He's a good guy for saying that.
Me a favor, Bill, if you would please send him an email and identify yourself as the chairman of the American Freedom Party and thank him profusely for taking our side.
Yeah, okay. But in any event, but before we go on...
If you really want to cause mischief, write to all the other wannabes seeking the Democratic nomination and tell them that Vice President Biden has the personal endorsement of William Johnson, the chairman of the American
Party.
That's like throwing a hand grenade into the party.
Yeah, he's so perspicacious in pointing out the good things. But anyway, all right. But before we leave this, we do have to revisit this issue about Donald Trump being paired to other presidents, because a scholar, I guess he's a left-wing scholar, but also he's very perspicacious and he's right on point. A lot of the Republicans and a lot of the conservatives are criticizing this scholar for what he came out with, but he said in an article that just came out in Huffington Post that Donald Trump is vying to be the most racist president ever. Not just what Biden says. He says the only other near competitor is, you guessed it, Andrew Jackson. So I thought, wow, putting Donald Trump with Andrew Jackson, he really elevated Donald Trump in my eyes. So yeah, there's a lot going on there, and it's going to be really rehabilitating all of these past presidents when they're being compared to the good guys, Donald Trump.
You just Donald Trump in the same company as Old Hickory.
Yeah, there you go. And the quote he says that you got to be careful when you're talking about a president who has no qualms with beating to death with a stick his would-be assassin. And I guess that's what Jackson did one time.
You just added a new word to my vocabulary. Perspicacious.
What? Perspicacious.
Perspicacious.
All right. Well, let's go on to another topic. It says, Trump announces a major shift in asylum policy. Well, now this is where I take umbrage with Donald Trump, because he makes all sorts of statements that I just stand up and go hooray on, and then a couple days later he's backpedaling. But so what's this latest soon-to-be backpedaling issue?
Well, the story goes something like this. Before you can seek asylum in the United States legally, you must first seek asylum. Just a second. I didn't press my cough button, but you first have to seek asylum in the nation through which you came to arrive in the United States. So, for example, if you are in Guatemala and you transverse through Mexico, you may not seek asylum in the United States until first you seek asylum in Mexico. They do this in Europe, by the way, or they're supposed to.
Canada and the U.S. have what's called the Third Safe Party Agreement, and that's exactly it. If you fly into Canada, you've got to make, and you want to make a refugee claim, you have to make a claim here. You can't go to the States and vice versa. If you fly in as a supposed tourist from Nigeria and head up to Canada, you've got to make your claim in the United States. So that's eminently sensible.
Okay. So then if this is enforced, what will the impact be on the cross-border immigration?
The United States will no longer be getting hordes of Guatemalans, El Salvadorians, Nicaraguans, because they have to come up to Mexico, and Mexico obviously doesn't want them. Mexico is going to have to enforce their southern border. That won't save the U.S. from getting Mexicans, but that's a different matter. But you will no longer get hordes of Central Americans, because I'm sure the Mexicans simply will not tolerate it. They're very nasty to people coming up from Central America if they get the idea they want to stay in Mexico. It's a genius move, I believe.
I think so. And also it's a start in converting the general public to taking these sterner, stricter measures. So let's cross our fingers and hope that he sticks by this. But you know there's going to be all sorts of opposition by the left, and in the court there's going to be court fighting and all of that, but we'll see how it plays out. That's a very good policy.
You know, the radical left will say that Mexico is not a safe country, And I think this is where Donald Trump, if he wishes, can be very diplomatic and say, well, Mexico is our longtime ally. It's a fellow democratic state. How dare you suggest it has, you know, poor human rights protections and so on. It I think it kind of puts the radical left and the do-gooding liberals in a difficult position, that they've got to outright denounce people that they usually tend to like. And I truly believe Mexico will not put up invasion across the
border. Will it create a flood of boat people?
You still have a navy?
No, I'm saying instead of traversing through Mexico, they'll do what they're doing in Europe, where they have these non-government organizations that buy their own boats, probably funded by Soros, but you can't say that because they kick off YouTube. And they load up these boats with refugees, and they bring them into safe harbor. But
the simple answer is what the Italian Vice President Salvini has done, and say that they're simply not welcome in Italian waters, and told them back. If you get boats coming, let's say from Mexico, that are filled with Guatemalans, the Coast Guard ideally would intercept them and say, look, you came from Mexico, you want to make a refugee claim, you go back and make it in Mexico. You're not coming up here. It's a matter of enforcement. As long as much of Europe was dominated by traitors, the invasion continued. Once Salvini got elected in Italy, he just about put a stop to the outrageous seaborne invasion heading from Libya to Italy.
Well, yeah, maybe eventually we'll wake up and we'll start changing the immigration with an I to immigration with an E, and we'll start moving people away. All right, well, let's go to the last topic, which is really kind of a sad topic, but it deserves, I think, a lot of analysis. This is about, I guess, a mob that took some vigilante justice into their own hands. So, Ken, why don't you tell us about that story?
Yeah, to understand the story, you need to understand the definition of lynching. Lynching is what I would call extrajudicial action that, well, it's an execution without the government, I guess the best way to say it. So when people think of lynching, they think of a rope, you know, lynch somebody from a rope, which I guess back in the 19th century was the most effective way to do it, most efficient. But if you beat somebody to death, same thing. It's still a lynch mob, and so we say this is a lynching. So the story is this. There was a woman, and the media, by the way, did not identify the race of these people. But it's in Philadelphia, and most of the people they interviewed were black, so I'm assuming the characters in the story are all black. But there's a woman who went to get a pizza, left her three kids, little kids, in the car. I guess the car was running, had to be open. Some 54-year-old man hijacked the car. So Mama Bear took off after this guy. Apparently, I don't know, she called her boyfriend or whatever, but she and her 25-year-old boyfriend, that's a story in itself, they caught up with this guy. He dragged him out of his car and began pounding him. The neighbors saw what was going on, and they joined in. And so this guy was beaten to a pulp. They hauled him off to the hospital where he died. So that is the essence of the story, but it raises a lot of questions in my mind. First one is, why did this woman leave her little kids in the car unlocked, maybe air conditioning, I don't know, when she went in to get a pizza? The other thing that comes to my mind is this innate behavior in black neighborhoods, because we've seen these stories many times where there is an accident. I remember a few years ago, there's a white guy driving a pickup truck. Some black kid ran out in front of him. He could not stop, hit the kid, and the driver was beaten by a mob. So is this some kind of innate behavior by black people? I mean, I know black people never do anything like this, but those seem to be part of the community.
Okay, let me address the first one. It used to be, when I was a kid, we could drive, my parents could drive to the store, they could leave me in the car, my brother and sister in the car, and they go in their air, they go to the mail, the post office, or they go to the feed store, whatever they want. Nothing would happen to the kids. Nothing would happen to the car. Nothing would happen to anybody. You wouldn't have anybody stealing the car. You wouldn't have anybody stealing the kids. You wouldn't have the police. You wouldn't have a do-gooder nosy body calling the social services to come in and arrest the parents. You would leave the kids in the car and go run an errand. We live in a different society now because of who we live around. So we should be able to have in a society where our little kids can ride their bicycles to school without getting the parents arrested for child endangerment. We don't live in that society anymore, and so that's got to change. We got to change back again. And we've all pointed out it'll only change back again once we have our own ethno state with our own people. And I was just in Utah in an outlying area just yesterday, the day before. It was a town that was swirled away by mountains, and you couldn't see it. They were almost all whites, and you saw little kids ride their bicycles around. There were a lot of little blonde-haired kids. They would be going their scooters all around. They were not being watched because they were in a good white community and a good white neighborhood. That's the way it used to be. And I thought, this is America that I grew up in. But then when I was in that community, I saw a couple of Hispanic kids there. And I thought, oh, I felt more threatened by those Hispanics moving into that white neighborhood than I have all sorts of Hispanics here in this neighborhood, because it's the start of the destruction. But in any event, to answer your first point, we live in a society now where you cannot leave your car with it on and the kids unattended, or something like this will happen. Did you want to address anything on this, Paul?
No, I think I'm with you all the way up to this point. We're not sure then the race of the person beaten to death or the race of the people beating, or are we just assuming?
Okay, I am sure. I don't know, but I'm sure. The people that were beating on him were black. The kids were black. The mother was black. The boyfriend was black. The kid, the 54-year-old man that was beaten to death, he was white. Why do I say that? Because, one, he's 54 years old. Black people, 54, it's the young black people that steal cars. The 54-year-old black man, he's ensconced in the government society. He's got enough money. He doesn't have to steal anymore. But the displaced white man, he will steal. Second of all, you had all these neighborhood blacks come out and beat this guy to death. They would not beat to death another black man. So it, to me, it's clear. The person that was beaten to death was white.
And also, white people don't behave like that.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine a white mom dragging a guy out of the car and beating, not even knowing what they're beating him for.
It was another government cover-up, black on white beating. Now, of course, you steal a car, you face some consequences. And a lot of good do-gooders say, well, you know, you shouldn't face death for stealing a car. My take on that is there are too many people in this world, and the blacks beating up car stealing white people is not as tragic as a lot of people make it out to be. Still, you got to be aware of the mob black mentality, that they will pound on you if they have a chance to your death.
They will, and it has happened. It happens all the time. I'm going to say this parenthetically while thoughts in mind, but somebody left a comment on one of our videos and referred to us, the three of us, as the based boomers. And I think that was a comment.
What?
Based. B-A-S-E-D. Based boomers.
Okay. This is a phrase that I need to be aware of, because you have based as a concept and woke as a concept, and I got to make sure that I'm not using them improperly. See, oh, that person is woke, or that person is based. And I'm not sure which is which.
Well, based means centered. I mean, you got your head screwed on straight. Or been drawing drugs, one or the other. I'm not sure which, but I think I'm the first.
I thought it meant that you are aware racially. And I thought
could be.
Woke means that you are aware racially on the other end. That you see all of the white oppression and you see all of the white privilege. So if you're woke, like Nike is woke, because, and Gillette is woke because they take out the Dolly Parton flag or whatever it is, and the that was a joke. And then also they'll have the commercials where transgender people are shaving. That means you're woke. So I believe
they are woke. We are red pilled.
Yeah. Oh, okay. What is? But what I was thinking is, I don't know who names the generations. I don't know who named the baby boomers, who named the millennials and the X generation, the Y generation. But I was hoping that the next generation would be called the woke generation. But I thought woke, I wanted woke to be awakened to our point of view, not awakened to Nike's point of view.
So that's how I'd interpreted it. But you're saying that Nike is woke. My fervent prayer is if they annoy enough white people, they'll be broke. And this would be a judgment on them. I don't mind the boomer title because, you know, we're all from that generation born between 45 and 60 or 65. But I'm very curious if based well grounded and with our heads screwed on.
Then I think we should push to name the next generation after the Y generation or the X, whatever the next one is, call it the based generation, because it's going to be up to them. This little Soph and her 13-year-old compadres, we're going to have to save the world from the boomers.